Welcome to Locked On Nets. On today's show, myself and Marcus will discuss the Nets' heartbreaking loss to the Toronto Raptors, summarize the Nets' activity at the trade deadline, and discuss who is the Nets' best opponent to play in the first round of the NBA playoffs. All that and more on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets here. I am Josh Bass, joined by my boy Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's going on?
Josh, welcome back. I missed you on the pod the other day. You know, I had to go solo without you.
I know. I always have faith that you can do it, and that's why I strategically plan my trips, because I want to test you almost.
It worked out because I did go to the game in person, so it was the right one to do solo.
You passed with flying colors. You live tweeted the entire game at Locked On Nets, and you held down the fort while I was skiing in Vermont and trying to see if there were any NBA personnel at the ski lodge that I could schmooze up.
How'd the skiing go, by the way? Did you fall a lot? Did you? Because I know you're not like a big skier, so how was
it? Well, I never skied before. I expected to be really bad, and I think I was as bad as I thought I would be. Fell a good amount of times, did improve slightly by the end, took a lesson or two because I didn't want to be negligent and kill anyone out in the slopes, but I don't know, skiing is not my thing. Podcasting is my thing. I love to talk, and that's why we're here, to get you that Brooklyn Nets content daily, and also tweeting at Locked On Nets. And Marcus, the Nets played the number two team in the East, and I think a team that after the big trade for Marc Gasol could be probably the favorite to win the Eastern Conference this season. Obviously up there along with Philly, Milwaukee, and to a lesser degree Boston. And the Nets played this Toronto team pretty toe-to-toe. Joe Harris had 7 threes in the first half. He was going off. Nets had a nice comeback late. Alan Crabb had a couple big shots, but ultimately Kawhi banks in a mid-range jumper with 4 seconds left. D'Angelo Russell gets not a heave necessarily, but a very tough off-balance look from three to win it. Didn't go in, and the Nets fall 127-125 to Toronto.
Yeah, the bank shot was kind of ironic because the Alan Crabb three from earlier along the wing that banked in kind of like brought the Nets back into it, and then it was the same bank that took them right out of it.
The bank giveth, the bank taketh.
Exactly. I was obviously very impressed by the Nets throughout the game and their ability to kind of hang with Toronto. I kept expecting that like every time the Raptors went on like a little 5 or 7 point run that they would pull away and that would be it. And then every time someone on the Nets would hit a big shot to kind of keep them in the game. So obviously super impressive that they were able to hang with this team on the road, a team that has already won 42 games, so they're already over 500 for the year. They could lose every game the rest of the way. It wouldn't matter. Disappointing ending, but still, I think overall, this was an impressive performance in a loss, as impressive as it could be.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe Nick Nurse will hear this on the podcast and be like, guys, let's try to lose every game and just go 42-40 just to spite everyone. But yeah, a lot of encouraging signs in this one. Joe Harris, as I mentioned, really carried the Nets in the first half. They hit 13 threes in the half, finished with 20 for the game. And then D'Angelo Russell, who was pretty bad in the first half, 1 of 7 from the field, couldn't get a lot going, struggled to finish at the rim with some of the Raptors' length. But he really started cooking in the third quarter, finished with 28 points, 14 assists, added 7 rebounds. And for me, the biggest thing was how great his finishes were on layups in that third quarter, almost Kyrie Irving, like the kind of the creativity he had on some of those shots.
Yeah, it looked like he spun some around where he like almost didn't even use the backboard on one or two of them that I saw. He kind of just like flipped them up and spun them in off the rim. But the 14 assists, I think that was a career high, and only 4 turnovers, which is not the best. But when you have 14 assists, I mean, and you have the ball as much as he did, it's tough to get that less than that number. I thought he played really well in the second half, like you said. And Joe Harris was unbelievable in the first half. Like, there's really nothing more to say than that. It was kind of like Toronto focused their defense on him in the third and fourth quarters because he didn't really get involved that much. But still, super impressed by that first half, obviously.
Yeah. He had one look late where it was a wide open mid-ranger with about, I guess, maybe 18, 20 seconds on the clock.
Yeah.
And he just completely short-armed it. But he was really the reason the Nets were had a 4-point lead going into halftime, because he was just on fire, hitting ridiculously tough looks. So he had a great game. You can't blame him at all. I guess curious from, I don't know, I feel like I like that the Nets went for the win, but almost it seemed like the floor was so spaced out in that final possession that D'Lo almost had, it seemed like he could have just cut towards the rim and he would have had a layup if the inbounder was on the same page as him, but instead he kind of floated back out to the 3-point line. Were you noticing that also?
Yeah, completely. I agree that I generally like the decision to go for the win, so I'm not mad at that part of it, like getting off a 3-point attempt, but definitely the paint was wide open, and Jared Allen set a really nice screen, and whoever was guarding D'Lo kind of got held up on that, and even Allen himself could have rolled to the rim, but instead he popped out to the top of the key where he wasn't really doing anything, and he wasn't really posing much of a threat. If he had at least rolled, that would have given another option to kind of throw the ball into. But yeah, D'Lo definitely had the opportunity to get into the paint, and I thought that maybe he was told beforehand, like, we're taking a three, so he looked like he almost ran back to the line to shoot it. But so not the best look, but at the same time, that Joe Harris shot before, that's like as good a look as you're going to get, and it just didn't go in, and the Kawhi bank shot was obviously super tough. So, I mean, I would live with those two shots
if
you told me that was the what was going to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the process was fine, and obviously don't hate the look, but think there could have been a better opportunity there. But going for the win against a Toronto team on the road, you know, it's fine. What you mentioned Jared Allen, and I think he had a really interesting game for me because he scored 15 points on 6 of 10 shooting. And say, hey, that's great. He had a three. He did that. But he got really didn't make an impact besides a couple of like very easy dunks where it was just a breakdown on Toronto's defense. And he got absolutely cooked by Ibaka on the other end. Ibaka scored 18 points on 9 of 13 shooting, and he was just wide open from that 18-foot range every time, and that's a shot that he's so good on. So, I don't know, I felt like Jared Allen got caught in no man's land a lot, where he wasn't really protecting the rim, but he also wasn't getting out to contest shooters, and I was disappointed in his play in this game.
Yeah, and Marc Gasol had an incredible game also the bench, where I was actually surprised that the Raptors didn't put him back in late, where the Nets were kind of making that run, because it felt like they could not stop him, and like that hook shot was insane that he kept hitting.
Him and McCaw.
Yeah, McCaw was really good too. But yeah, with Jared Allen, I don't know, part of it I think was that the zone defense kind of makes it so that he's not necessarily attached to a guy, so you kind of are giving that short jumper to Ibaka, but like you said, that's kind of the shot that he's made his own in the NBA, and that's kind of what was the first thing about his game in Oklahoma City that elevated him to another level. So I think it's kind of based on personnel where you might have to like shift things defensively. And I talked about this on the solo pod where I think the Nets have maybe become over-reliant on the zone on defense, and they kind of fall back into it pretty consistently, and they don't adjust once the other teams adjust. So it's like they use the zone as this counter to the other teams on offense, but then once the other teams counter their counter, the Nets don't really have anything else to pivot to. And part of that is missing Dinwiddie and missing multiple defenders on the perimeter who can defend the point of attack. But so it's personnel-based and to some degree. But at the same time, you need to adjust to the pieces that you have available. And I think that Kenny could probably do a better job of that. Maybe he'll look at it in the All-Star break.
Yeah, no, I hope so. I think that and maybe I should listen to the solo pod to make for a more
you didn't listen?
more informed discussion going forward. I should have actually played that in our when a bunch of us were Ubering around Vermont, just being like, guys, we're going to listen to my co-host's podcast. I know you guys don't care about the Nets and barely listen when it's me on it, but now it's just going to be my friend.
LaChapelle would have loved it.
Yeah. Shout out to Chris LaChapelle. I wonder if he's going to listen to this.
We'll see.
We'll see. I'll text him. But yeah, no, I think you make a good point. I think Kenny will adjust. I mean, we've seen that he's not the best in-game adjuster, in my opinion, but he does a nice job when he has a lot of time to prep, and he makes a lot of nice defensive adjustments throughout the season. I think the zone was very innovative. I think it's gotten overexposed over time. So we'll see what wrinkles he has in store for the Nets kind of coming off the All-Star break. I don't think anything's going to change for the game against Cleveland on Wednesday, but excited to see what Kenny can cook up in his laboratory. So let's take a quick break here. on Locked On Nets. Coming up, we'll continue to recap this Toronto game, discuss a bit more about how we think Caris LeVert looked, and also talk a bit more about the Nets and their lack of moves, really, at the NBA trade deadline coming up. Segment two here on Locked On Nets. Quickly, before we talk about Caris LeVert, wanted to give two quick shout-outs. One was a guy that I saw getting a lot of praise last night, and one someone that's more under the radar. So Travion Graham, you know, he had 6 points, 2 of 6 shooting, one rebound, one assist in 20 minutes, but I don't think the box score really showed how good of a job he did on Kawhi Leonard. I thought he was really doing a nice job getting into his body, contesting, making Kawhi get to his making his mid-range looks a bit more difficult. And Kawhi Leonard's a tough player to stop, but Graham was doing a nice job just bothering him a bit more than anyone else. I'm surprised he only played 20 minutes, but I wanted to give him some credit for his defensive effort. And then Alan Crabb, who's hit 11 threes in his last two games, really been on fire since coming back from the bruised fat pad in his knee. That's one, the last thing you want to bruise. He was on fire, 22 points, 8 of 13 from the field. And I thought, in addition to his shot going in, I thought he looked very spry. So great to see him back and like the element he's been able to give to the Nets as kind of a secondary Joe Harris option, if you will, off the bench.
Yeah, completely agree. And he was red hot in the Chicago game, and it just kept going. It felt like he could hit from any distance.
And maybe he can.
Mm.
We will see. Marcus, Caris LeVert made his return the last game against Chicago, and had some nice moments. 5 steals, career high for him in 16 minutes. Thought he looked a little bit rusty against Toronto. I mean, finished 3 of 11 from the field, 5 turnovers, had 2 incredible moves, which he just flubbed the layup, and that happens. You know, he'll get that back very soon. But thought his 3-point shot, he was 0 of 5, and none of them were really close.
Yeah, he was definitely a lot smoother in the Bulls game, and maybe part of that was due to playing at home. Maybe part of it was because it was the first game back, so he was like extra jazzed up. But yeah, he was a little sloppier in this game, and one thing that he didn't have in the Bulls game that he still doesn't have is what you mentioned, the 3-point shot, which is probably going to become important come playoff time. But I think for now, it's just good to see him playing at full energy, and he looks athletically where he was before the injury, and so that's a good sign. And I think that part of it is just rust, like you said. And so, like, the jumper will come, and it's important to see him attacking as much as he is. He doesn't really seem to have any fear, which is good. There's, like, no mental hurdles, it doesn't look like, at least. So I'm encouraged overall by his first two games, I'll say.
Okay. Yeah, no, so am I. I think, especially after watching Gordon Hayward for 50-plus games this season, and he just does not look like himself at all, I think that at least Caris is passing the eye test, and you know that the actual results are going to come around pretty soon. So definitely, given all things considered, when he first hurt his leg against Minnesota, it's been a pretty remarkable road for him these last couple months. So while the Nets perimeter rotation is getting shored up pretty solidly with the return of Crabb and LeVert, I think the 4 position is still something that's a huge need. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is just shows he can't get it done, unfortunately. I think his time with the Nets is pretty much will come to a close after this season. Obviously, missing Damari Carroll last night was a huge void for the Nets to fill. But Marcus, you know, they didn't really make a move for a 4 at the trade deadline. They got Greg Monroe and a second-round pick for cash, and then cut Monroe. But there were guys being moved around. Nikola Mirotic got traded to Milwaukee. Jamichael Green got traded to the Clippers. These were guys that I could see fitting into the Nets. Were you surprised that they didn't make a move, and also should they have?
I was a little surprised that they didn't make a move for a 4. I didn't expect them to do anything crazy just because of all the guys that they have coming back. I mean, they're going to get an infusion of talent, which we've already seen in LeVert and Crabb, and Dinwiddie will be back hopefully soon after the All-Star break. But I mentioned this in the solo podcast that there are still guys on the buyout market. Like Markieff Morris is available. He'd be a really good fit. I saw Jared Dudley tweeting about that. And I think if you can just bring someone in who can bring some level of offense to that position, because obviously Rondé's been fine on defense. That's one area where he's not crazy behind. And Travion's, like you mentioned, has been really good on defense. But neither of them is bringing anything much on offense outside from Graham occasionally hitting some threes. But I don't think you can really rely on that. So I think getting someone more consistent at that position would be really big.
Yeah. Wait, so Jared Dudley tweeted that they should sign Markieff Morris?
Well, it was because someone was asking, I think someone tweeted at him asking if he would be, like, pro the Nets bringing Markieff Morris in just because of, like, his reputation as maybe, like, not the best teammate. And then Dudley was like, oh, I was with him on the Wizards. He's a good guy. Like, right. Any talent we can bring in, we should. So it wasn't necessarily, like, we should bring him in, but it was, like, I wouldn't mind if we brought him in.
He'll be so close to his brother, so it's fine.
they can face each other in the playoffs.
Exactly. The thing is, they need to be at the, they need to have access to the same banks so they can withdraw from their shared account. But yeah, I don't know. Markieff Morris, there's some weird stuff going on where like he's still getting the second opinion on his neck, and they're not sure how long it's going to take. And he is kind of a tough guy to integrate, even though he can win you a game in the playoffs just because he can get hot and start cooking from mid range and going to the basket as that face up four. But you know, his 3-point range has always been a little bit too inconsistent for my liking. Career about 34% shooter from three, and he's definitely, I mean, he's was pretty good the last couple of years and now down to 33% this year. So he's a bit of a mercurial guy. But definitely from a talent standpoint, probably worth taking a flyer on, but who knows? I think from my perspective, I was surprised they didn't make a move, just at least to get some upgrade there and solidify getting that 6 or 7 seed, because the Nets have had been such a feel-good story for this year that if they don't make the playoffs, I think it's a disappointment. So trying to make sure they get that playoff spot, become a more attractive destination for free agents, and really capitalize on the goodwill they've been able to create throughout the league this season.
Yeah, and I think they're still in good shape to make the playoffs. They're, as we record this, they're 2.5 ahead of Miami to make the playoffs. But yeah, I expected at least a small move, which I guess we kind of got with the Greg Monroe move, but that wasn't really.
It's a minuscule player. Move. It's not even small.
It's minute.
I know.
But yeah, I mean, even like a Mike Scott type who went to Philly could have helped on offense.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think, I mean, honestly, the Scala-Bissiere for Caleb Swanigan trade, it looks like a blockbuster compared to the Greg Monroe deal.
That was a big trade. Biggie Swanigan on the move.
Yeah. And that's could have used Scala-Bissiere, I think.
I guess. I don't know. Is he like that much better than Alan Williams?
He kind of has like an Amish look to him because he has the beard with no mustache.
That is a very Amish look.
Yeah, I think we could have used that in Brooklyn. But anyway, enough Scala-Bissiere talk. I think we probably talked about him more than anyone has ever done on a podcast besides our boys at Locked On Kings and now Locked On Blazers, I guess. But that's going to do it for this segment here. We'll come back and discuss a little bit talking about the Nets' final game before the All-Star break against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And who would, of these top four teams in the East would be the best matchup for the Nets in the first round of the playoffs? All that and more right now. Last segment here on Locked On Nets. Quickly, just wanted to tell you guys to please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be iTunes, Stitcher, what have you. Hopefully we are everywhere. I think we should be at this point with the Nets' rising popularity and us really doing a good job. So please rate and review us and tell us how good of a job we're doing or bad of a job if you think it's like that. And then follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. I know I mentioned the account a bunch of times this episode, but would appreciate the follow there. And I think we're putting out some cool stuff during games, just kind of giving you our thoughts on certain plays and stuff the Nets are running that we don't necessarily get to talk about when we're doing the full game recaps. Marcus, quickly, wanted to get your thoughts on a question that I think I saw our boy Smash Williams post on Twitter the other day.
Shouts to Smash.
Yeah, so it's looking pretty likely. I think that currently Indiana's 2.5 games above Boston, 1.5 above Philly, but given current trajectories, I think it's pretty likely, even though Indiana's won 6 in a row, that eventually they will slip out of the top 4 seeds. I mean, who really knows at this point? But looking at those top 4 teams, at least from a talent standpoint, in Milwaukee, Toronto, Philly, and Boston, who would be the best matchup for the Nets in the first round if the Nets were to pull off a possible upset?
Well, obviously, Indiana would be the best matchup if they can hold on. Like, if the playoffs were today, we'd play them. Or, not we, excuse me. Wow, the Nets would play them. But,
yes.
We
did it, guys.
Yeah, it's happening. But of the other 4 teams, I think I might say the Celtics. Even though they were like coming into the season, they were like such a big favorite, and I think some people, I'm not going to name names, but some people at The Ringer projected them to win over 67 games. I just think that the other three teams are so talented right now, and they all made moves at the deadline with the Mirotić addition for Milwaukee, Marc Gasol for Toronto, and Tobias Harris and some other guys for Philly. Those three teams are just really, really loaded. And with the Celtics, I think there's definitely friction with Kyrie possibly leaving, and I think that they are kind of vulnerable and they're floundering a little bit. And I think if they, but the thing about them is that if they were to get to the 3 seed, or even the 2 seed, if the Nets slip, that they would have to have been playing well the last couple months. So it's kind of a catch 22 in that way, where you want them now, but if they turn things around and the Nets were actually playing them, you probably wouldn't want them. But that's probably who I would want at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, you know, I think the pretty clear option before the trade deadline was Philly, just because the Nets have played them so well this season. Obviously winning that game. Then there's the one game where the Nets had that bad loss where the Philly came storming back and Jimmy Butler hit the game winner. But with Tobias Harris, I think they're just too talented. I'm kind of leaning towards Toronto, because I think Milwaukee would kill the Nets, just because with Mirotić and Brook Lopez, their spacing is way too good.
Yeah.
And the Nets don't have anyone with the length to even come close to matching up with Giannis. And then Boston, I think the Nets could kind of have a hard time guarding point guards and Kyrie Irving. They do have, the Celtics have a lot of guys that can hurt you one-on-one. Jason Tatum can hurt you one-on-one. I think obviously Kyrie can get going. Marcus Morris can get going, and he's given the Nets problems. Horford can do some damage on switches. So I have to go with Toronto, because I feel like besides Kawhi Leonard, they don't really have anyone. I mean, I guess Gasol can give you some scoring. Pascal is going to be
my boy. Oh my God.
Yeah, he's your boy, and he's had such a great year and one of the most improved players in the league. But this is going to be his first time really needing to play a key role on a playoff team, and we'll see how he does. But I think, you know, if the Nets can just control Kawhi to maybe 25 points a game, they would probably have the best shot of beating the Raptors of any of these kind of key four teams, just because the Raptors don't have the bevy of scoring options that other teams do.
Yeah, and if that series were anything like this game, I mean, I would sign up for that right now. That was a super entertaining game. The one thing about Toronto is I think they've kind of owned the Nets the last couple of years. Like, I don't think Brooklyn's beaten them since like 2015, maybe. I think
no, we beat them earlier this year.
I thought they showed that graphic, and maybe it's in Toronto.
Yeah, in Toronto.
But so yeah, but I do think it would be a competitive series against them, and I think the same against Boston. I think Milwaukee, like you said, I think would kind of run them, and Philly probably is just too talented. So I think Toronto and Boston are probably the two that I would have as my top two right now. But I definitely see the case for Toronto that you laid out.
Yeah, and let's keep hoping that Indiana stays on their torrid pace, and would love to see a playoff matchup between the Pacers and the Nets. I just don't think the Pacers have that top-level talent to get it done.
Would D'Angelo Russell be the best player in that series? I think he might.
Yeah. You could make an argument even for D'Angelo Russell, Dinwiddie, or Caris LeVert, honestly.
Yeah, wow.
As the best player in that series. But, I mean, listen, Indiana has so much depth. Sabonis is a beast inside. Miles Turner can give Jared Allen a lot of problems. And then let's not forget about the two ex-Nets, Thaddeus Young and Bojan Bogdanović, who have both shown that, especially against playing versus their former team, that they can really carry them to a victory. And Thaddeus Young, remember, Player of the Week this year, earlier in the season. So you don't want to go up against the Player of the Week.
Yeah, I think whoever Indiana plays, it'll be a tough series. I don't think they'll get swept. I think they're just kind of too tough.
Yeah, they are, and they're well coached. I think McMillan gets a lot of flack, but he does a good job with them.
Yeah, I think he has them playing well defensively, at least.
Yeah,
pretty much his whole time there.
Mm. So Marcus, one last game for the Nets before the All-Star break. They're playing the dreadful Cleveland Cavaliers, who are 12-45. They recently got Kevin Love back and beat the hapless New York Knicks. But is it fair to say that this game is kind of, you know, the Nets need to win this? I mean, obviously they don't need to win it, but it's nice for them to play a really bad team and kind of iron the kinks out, maybe experiment with some lineups, get Caris LeVert back in the flow with a game against really a terrible team. But, you know, the Nets played Chicago recently and got blown off the court. So maybe this isn't the easy win that we think it is, but the Nets really have to take care of business against the Cavs.
Yeah, and this game will determine if the Nets are over or under 500 heading into the All-Star break. This could also be the Nets' 30th win, so a lot riding on it. Hopefully they learned from the Chicago game that they still need to get up for these games and that they can't just kind of like walk their way through. Like, they've played really well this year, but they're not at that level where they can take teams for granted.
Yeah, and also even for our psyche, I think it's important because, listen, they lose a game to the Bulls or someone like that. At most, there's 2 days before it's on to the next one. This, they're not going to be playing for 8 days. I can't be thinking 8 days in a row about the Nets just losing to an inferior Cleveland Cavaliers team. So for my sake, Nets, please get this W. I already plugged everything at the beginning of the show, so no need to do it here. Marcus and I will be back podcasting. We'll get something out on Thursday recapping the Cavs game, and then want to get a pod or two out over the All-Star break, including a mailbag for what to expect for the second half of the season, the playoffs, hopefully, and then the 2019 offseason for our beloved Brooklyn Nets. That's going to do it. You can follow myself on Twitter at @JMBass_. Marcus is @MarcusBearHall, and we will speak to you.
Bye.